Thank you for listening to this message from Valley Bible Fellowship. It is our sincere prayer that you're richly blessed through the ministry of the Word. For more information about VBF, visit our website at vbf.org.
All right, thanks, Gennaro. Good to see everybody. Hello to you. Hello to you online. If you're new, I am the campus pastor of the Valley Vegas Church, a church that this church started next April. It will be 20 years, believe it or not. So that church is going strong over there. Thank you for all your support and turning Pastor Ron loose 20 years ago to come over and get the church started. And so anyway, great things over there. Hope you get a chance to come over there. Check your wallet. Don't bring your wallet with you. Leave your money at home. Just come over and visit the church, and that way you won't lose your shirt. Okay, we're going to start off with a question. How many people, other than me, have control issues? Any control freaks in the house? Some of your wives are raising your husband's hands, I see right now. Oh, man. I am the butt of our family's jokes because I am a control freak. I don't know if it's being brought up in an alcoholic family where you just, things are out of control, so you try to control everything that you can. And so I it freaks me out. My wife, Vicky, will mess with my head. We'll be sitting there watching TV, and she knows that I have the remote because I have to be in control. I have to be able to mute the commercials, and, you know, when we're watching her little, you know, crime show, I can switch over to SportsCenter or a hunting show and commercials and whatever the case may be. But she'll mess with my head, and she'll grab the remote every now and then. And just kind of hold it. I say, funny, give it to me. She won't. I said, real funny. I said, no, seriously, give it to me. She's like, you know, give me the remote. I'm going to lose it. I just, scary not having that thing. Well, unfortunately, over the years, I've realized I've taken that control issue into my walk with God. I have a hard time sometimes believing that God's in control or letting God have control. And maybe you're like me, and I'll never forget reading this verse, and I was reminded of again lately, and that's where this message was birthed. I'm calling this God to the Rescue. This message was birthed. Oh, there's my brother Dave. Hello, Dave. This message was birthed by reading this verse again, and it's 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 10. And that says, after you have suffered for a little while, the God of all grace who called you to his eternal glory in Christ will himself perfect, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. Now, if you were to take those four words, perfect, confirm, strengthen, and establish, and look at the full definition in the original language that the New Testament was written in Greek, and put that into a sentence or into a verse, it would read like this. It would read, after you have gone through a painful experience and sensation, when you suffer, whether it's just suffering as a Christian or just suffering being in this broken world that we live in, there's a painful sensation. You actually feel it. You feel it sometimes physically. You feel it in your emotions. It's just like, oh, this hurts. It says, after you've gone through a painful experience and a sensation, the God of all grace who called you to his eternal glory, do you realize that this is basically just college, this is vocational school, this 70, 80, 90 years that we have here on earth? We're only here for that short time versus eternity with God. How, eternity. So God is preparing us. And don't think that when we get to heaven, we're just going to be fat, chubby angels sitting on a cloud just strumming a little harp up there, doing nothing. No, in heaven, it's called the new heaven and what? The new earth. There'll be a lot of the same things that we're doing up there that we're doing here, but in an environment that is not corrupted by sin and by the devil. He won't be there. But we are going to be busy. We're going to be ruling. We're going to be exploring. I want to be a guide up in South Dakota, if they have a South Dakota in heaven. I love the pheasant hunt, so I want to be up there and just showing people. I've asked God if I can be posted up there. but we're going to be busy up there. It says he called you to his eternal glory. So he's getting us ready right now. Why are you suffering? Why do you go through trials? He's getting you ready for eternity. And then how he'll do that, it says, he will himself completely repair you. That's the word for perfect, completely repair you. How many of you, when you came to Christ, were broken? You were just jacked up from your upbringing or jacked up from your own mistakes or jacked up from people messing with you, and God's put you back together. I am so different now than when I first was when I came to Christ. I know you are as well. He'll completely repair you. He will turn you resolutely in the right direction. That means he'll confirm you. Many people, when they come to the Lord, they're all over the place. They don't know if they're going this direction. I don't know if I'm a cowboy. I don't know if I'm a skater. I don't know if I want to do drugs. I don't know if I'm a party guy. I don't know if I want to try to make $1 million. He'll get you saying, okay, wait a second. I'm to be going this direction. I'm to follow God. I'm to serve God. He'll get you straightened out. You'll have a good path that you'll be going down in life. And it says that he'll make you stronger and more able to endure trials and give. He'll strengthen you. Do you realize that every trial that you get through, you're stronger for the next one? Every trial you get through, that's why the Bible says to consider it joy when you go through trials, although they're kind of painful, knowing that, man, you are learning to trust God more, you're learning to be stronger. What ate your lunch 5 years ago, now if you go through it, it's like, no big deal. You know, got a little financial problem, no big deal. God's come through for me before. See, you're stronger. Your faith's getting stronger. And then lastly, it says he'll give you a firm foundation that you can build upon. That's what it means, the established part of that. God says, okay, I've got you fixed up. I got you repaired. You've gone through some trials. You're going in the right direction now. Now we can really begin to do something with your life. And oftentimes that involves ministry. Oftentimes that involves, you know, a calling, a new vocation. He's got you straightened out. He said, this is God's plan for our life. And so we can just kind of rest in that. For instance, let me give you an example of this. God's plan was to make a great nation out of the Hebrew people. Okay? He said that through Abraham. I'm going to make a great nation of you. And so what happened, unfortunately, is they fell into Egyptian bondage there. And they're there for 400 years, right? And then they call out, God help us. And then a man by the name of Moses comes along. Remember that? And Moses is used by God, and he has 10 plagues, and it kind of softens up Pharaoh, who wouldn't let the people go from Egypt. And finally, he let them go. And then on the way there, he miraculously provided for them. They're going through a desert, and not much food out in the desert. I know I live in one. I've lived there for 15 years and thinking it looks so snaky there. It looks so much like a rattlesnake. I've not seen one snake there. And the reason why is there's no food, no water there. Snakes don't even want to be there. So there's not much in the desert to eat. So God caused what? Manna, this dew-like substance that would fall down. And they'd have, banana manna pancakes in the morning and a manna shake in the afternoon, something. So they'd have manna. Water out of a rock. Moses, water come. Boom, it came. Banged it with a sword. Water came. Supernaturally used creation to provide for his people. And then the nation that he gave them, the land that he gave them, God went ahead of them, softened up, punched up those nations. So when Israel went in there, it all, like, you know, we defeated them. No, God softened them up for you. And now this is your land. And so there you go. God was establishing them, confirming them, repairing them. God had a plan for them. And he used all of his arsenal, all of creation to establish that. Now, he'll do the same thing for you and I. He's got a plan for you. Not only is it the plan for eternity, but he's got a specific plan for your life right now. And he will literally move heaven and earth to help get that accomplished in your life. Now, here's just three things that God has at his beck and call to rescue us when we need rescuing. Number one, God uses people to rescue us. If we're in a tight spot, if something is between us and where God wants us, God will use people oftentimes to come to our aid. Let me use this story that I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with it, but it's a story in the book of Acts, specifically chapter 23. It has to do with the Apostle Paul. If you know much about Paul, I've for years compared Pastor Ron Vietti to Apostle Paul. Wherever Pastor Ron goes, there's either one of two things. There's either riot or revival. Either he's going to move people towards God, or there are going to be people that are wanting to kill him, because that's just that personality. And that was Paul. And in this case, Paul is in Jerusalem, and he's preaching, and lo and behold, people are actually listening this time. See, they didn't like Paul because he was a former Judaizer. He was saying, hey, the law was great, but now, man, it's the New Testament, it's Jesus, and they didn't like that. But, man, for once, they were listening to him. And they're saying, huh, Paul is saying, hey, man, I was one of you. Remember? I'm a Pharisee. I'm a Jew. I was on my way to put people in prison for the faith. Remember, I'm that guy. And then the Lord came to me on the road to Damascus, guys, and he literally knocked me off my high horse. And he said, why do you persecute me? I said, man, I'm telling you, this thing is real, guys. And they said, huh, I think we're going to consider this. And then all of a sudden, Paul said, and God called me to preach the gospel to the Gentiles. And they said, oh, my God, here we go. Now, who's a Gentile? Well, anybody who's not Jewish. If you're not Jewish, you're a Gentile. And the Jews hated the Gentiles. The Jews thought that the only purpose for a Gentile to be alive was to keep the fires of hell burning. They were kindling for hell. That's how low they thought of them. We think we have racial, you know, lines here and racial problems in America. Nothing compared to that. They hated the Gentiles, and the Gentiles hated the Jews. And then when Paul said he's called to preach the gospel to the Gentiles, they said, oh, we're going to kill him, and they tried to kill him. And had not a Roman soldier, Rome was occupying Israel, and they were the final authority there. They pulled Paul away from that riot and brought him in and said, man, what is going on with you? And he said, hey, I'm just preaching. And all of a sudden, they said, well, hey, these guys, they want you. Why do they want you? And Paul explained the reason why. And that's where we pick up our story. Look at verse 12 of Acts 23. When it was day, the Jews formed a conspiracy. These Jews who were trying to get to Paul, Romans took them away. They can't get to Paul now because he's under Roman custody. They formed a conspiracy, and they bound themselves under an oath, saying that they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. There were more than 40 who formed this plot. They came to the chief priests and the elders and said, we have bound ourselves under a solemn oath to taste nothing until we have killed Paul. They said, you know what, man, we're not going to eat. I'm not going to drink, man. I swear I will not rest until this guy's dead. Now, therefore, you and the council notify the commander to bring him down to you as though you were going to determine his case by a more thorough investigation. And we, on our part, are ready to slay him before he comes near to the place. They said, hey, you know what, just tell him, hey, guys, we jumped the gun here. We kind of lost our temper with Paul. Maybe we need to hear him out. Bring him down again. We'll give him another shot to explain, you know, what's going on with this Jesus and stuff. Under the guise of when they do that, we're going to ambush him. We're going to jump him. And we got 40 of us, and we're going to kill him. But, the son of Paul's sister heard of their ambush. His nephew. And he came and entered the barracks and he told Paul. And Paul called one of the centurions, a Roman centurion, and said, lead this young man to the commander, for he has something to report. The commander heard the news, story goes on, and decided to say, hey, you know what, man, I'm not going to move him at the time that we said. We're going to secretly move him in the middle of the night. And they moved Paul down and got him down safely down to Rome, because, again, that was part of God's plan for him. See, God had a specific plan for Paul, just like he has one for you. And what is that plan? Well, it's found in verse 11 of Acts chapter 23. But on the night immediately following, the Lord stood at his side and said, take courage, he's talking to Paul here, for as you have solemnly witnessed to my cause at Jerusalem, you've talked to the Jews, so you must also witness for me at Rome to the Gentiles. And God said, you know what? Hey, it's my will for you to tell the Romans about Jesus, and I will move heaven, I will move hell, I will supernaturally provide and protect you to accomplish that in your life, Paul. And he did. He did. God will bring key people into your life to accomplish his purposes. It's important that we identify those people. A lot of people come in and out of our life, right? I mean, high school friends and even elementary school friends and then work friends, and you've got church friends, and we got people coming in and out all the time, and sometimes those are short-term relationships, but occasionally, and it's important to identify, there are some people that are there for the long haul. They're just people that God has brought into your life, and they were used by God to accomplish his purposes in your life. For me, one of those persons was Pastor Ron. Vic and I came to this church way back in the day. In fact, my younger brother Greg was the first one who attended Valley Bible, and then I got saved after that, and our family began to come, and he has been a key part of my life for many years. In fact, I'm the longest tenured staff member of Pastor Ron's. We've been together 34 years laboring for the Lord together. And we've mutually benefited from one another. He's a type A, and I needed a type A in my life. I'm a type B. Pastor Ron needed a type B. Who are type A's? They are the people, they're the Pauls. They're the people that start stuff, and they got high energy, and they're you know, riot or revival. But then sometimes they're on to the next thing. And it's like the legs haven't been put on that vision yet. And so who's a type B? Well, type B are just more plodders. I'm just steady Eddie, and I'll just stay here, and I'll put the wheels on, and we'll tighten the screws. And so you've got to have the type A's to start, and you've got to have the type B's to kind of maintain. And those are really good working relationships. And we've worked well together along those lines. You know, there's personality types. And I've heard over the years, I've just used a type A, type B, and I said, I've said that for years, but I don't even really know what a type A and a type B is other than what I just briefly explained to you. But I did a study. Here's what I found out. I found out that the type A personality and the type B came from, of all people, cardiologists. Heart doctors came up with that. Oh, that's intriguing. How did they come up with that? I said, well, here's how. They discovered that in the cardiologists, the people that were waiting to have their heart looked at, they noticed that the chairs in the waiting room would wear out different than any other chairs in any other medical office. And they said, huh, interesting. And they begin to observe it, and they notice, man, these people in the heart waiting room, the cardiologists, they can't sit still. They're constantly up and down. They're pushing up on the chairs. They're tapping their feet, you know, that stuff, and just moving around, whereas other people are just kind of sitting there chill going at other doctors. And they said, oh, my gosh, they're just wearing out the furniture. And here's what they found out. They found out that a lot of those people that were in there, shock, have hypertension. They have high blood pressure. Why? Because they can't sit still. They're just constantly like this. They're just constantly going. My wife is a type A and, yeah, has high blood pressure. She'll be sitting around. We'll be watching TV, and we've got one of those couches that have, you know, recliners you lay back and a little console in the middle. And, oh, my gosh, I'll look over there, and she's got that foot going. And I get super seasick. I can't even go deep sea fishing. And all of a sudden, I feel like I'm on a boat. And like, hun, I said, please stop, or if not, get me a bag, please, because this boat's really rocking. And I just, she's just there. She just tap, 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 tap. Those are type A's, lots of energy. I realized that there's a type C. Maybe you're a type C. I'm kind of a B, C. Who are type C's? They are people who have difficulty experiencing emotion. They stuff stuff. And because they stuff stuff, especially anger, they avoid conflict. So they could be mad as a hornet, but they don't like conflict. They don't know how to have conflict. And they will just stuff it. And then when it does come out, it comes out in inappropriate ways. They just blow up like, bah, and just, you know, what in the world happened there? Well, they've just been stuffing. It's like Mount St. Helens. It just explodes. Overcompliant. Party animals. They like to party. These are social people. So I'm not sure where you fit in there. But it's important to identify those key people that God has brought into your life. And guard those relationships. Satan will try to sever those relationships because he knows that they're helpful to you. He knows that that's part of God's plan. So once you identify those people, guard those things. Do not let arguments, do not let petty stuff get in the way of those things, especially if you're married to someone that's a different personality type, because very often our mates are those people that God uses. again, Vicky and I, she's a type A, I'm more of a type B. And you know, over the years, we've just butted heads because we're so different, but we've learned to appreciate those differences. Remember the truth that actually she shared at a few marriage retreats a few years ago. She said that God's purpose for marriage isn't to primarily make you happy, but to make you holy. It's not primarily to make you happy. Your mate is not your Disneyland tour guide. Make me happy. You never want to have fun with me. How come, you know, you're such a killjoy? No, that's not your mate's responsibility. Yeah, you want to have a good relationship, but God uses them oftentimes to rub those rough edges off of you, to cause you to have to change, to cause you to have to compromise, to cause you have to die to yourself. And you need to understand that and just go with the program. Guard, preserve those relationships. Secondly, the Lord also uses creation to rescue us. So he uses people, but he has all of creation. Everything that creation entails is at God's beck and call when we need rescuing so he can get us to the place that he wants for our life. For instance, back to that Hebrews in Egypt story. God used frogs, a plague of frogs, to soften up Pharaoh. Now, there's some people that would enjoy that. My brother would enjoy that. He likes to eat frog legs. For some of you, for me, that'd be gross. I'd hate to have a bunch of frogs invade me. Jesus caused a fish to surface to the top when they needed to pay his ministry team's taxes. Wouldn't you like to go fishing with Jesus? Hey, I'm broke. I need some money. I'm going to go throw a hook down here and come up. It's got money in its mouth. And a coin came up, and they were able to do that. God used a donkey, Balaam, that prophet who couldn't figure out if he was a prophet for God or who he was working for. And he was being disobedient, and he was going somewhere that God had told him you're not supposed to go. And an angel of God was fixing to kill Balaam. And his donkey somehow saw into the spirit and saw this angel in the middle of the path and a little narrow trail he's on, and the donkey pushed up against the wall there to get past his angel, had a sword drawn, and it pressed up against Balaam's leg. And he got mad at the horn and started beating on that donkey. You stupid donkey. And did a couple times. The donkey did it again. And finally, the donkey turned around and said, "What are you beating on me for?" And I don't know what's crazier, a donkey talking or now Balaam starting to talk with the donkey. "Because you ran me into the side of the wall." "Well, I ran you inside of the wall because an angel's getting ready to kill you." "Well, I didn't see that." "Well, have I ever steered you wrong?" The donkey said, "No, you never have." And just a crazy scene. But God used a donkey to spare Balaam. He used a strong south wind. When the people in Egypt tired of manna and they said, "We need some protein, we need some meat," and they asked God to do something, and God caused a south wind to come up, and a bunch of quail came in from the desert, and they began to take clubs and just beat these quail. So they had so many quail, of course their greed, you know, took over, and they had a waist high of quail. And God can use a wind, he can use all kinds of different things. But my favorite story, an example of God using creation to accomplish his purposes, entails Joshua. In Joshua chapter 10, I don't know if you've ever read this story. It's really interesting. But let me set the backdrop for you. Five nations had formed an alliance against a city by the name of Gibeon. Gibeon pulled a fast one on Joshua and Israel when they first went into the promised land. Gibeon had heard that Israel was just kicking hind in and taking names. When they came into the country, just defeating countries and Gibeon said, "Man, we're next." Now, the thing is, Gibeon lived right in the land, just a couple days walk from where Israel was at. And they would have been, you know, told to leave or, you know, defeated in war. And they said, "Hey, let's do something here." So what Gibeon did is they got a delegation and they dressed them up in old clothes, threw a bunch of dirt on them, made it look like they'd been sweating, had some supplies. They took stale bread, they took old cheese, and worn out clothes, and all of a sudden they came up and to Josh and the people said, "Hey, we're the Gibeonites. We come from a far away land. We've been walking for, oh my gosh, it's what, 2-3 months now. We live so far away from you. We've heard about your fame. Hey, we're no threat to you. Will you just strike a deal with us that you won't kill us? I know God's with you. We're no threat. Look, we live so far away from you." And the leaders, it says, they didn't pray. They didn't consult God. And they said, "Okay, we'll strike a deal with you." And they shook hands. We will not defeat you, and we'll protect you, way far away. And lo and behold, it was discovered a couple days later, got their attention, saying, "Hey, these Gibeonites, man, they don't live, 2 or 3 months away. They live just right over the hill. They're your neighbors." So they confronted him and said, "What are you doing?" They said, "Yeah, we were just kind of afraid of you. We knew that you were going to kill us, and so we just had to kind of go to these means." And they said, "Okay, well, a deal's a deal, but guess what? You're going to be our workers for the rest of your life." And so now you got the Gibeonites living in Israel's land, and now five nations, as Gibeon grew stronger, said, "Hey, we got to get the Gibeonites. We better get them. If not, they're going to get us." And so the Gibeonites came to Joshua and said, "Hey, these five kings, man, they're going to come after us. We need some help." And Joshua said, "All right, we're into this thing now. We'll come help you." And they went to fight. And, of course, God was with Joshua. So Joshua and Israel and the Gibeonites, they're defeating all these five kings. But the sun was going down. And they said, "Man, if we don't finish this job, they're going to regroup. They're going to maybe go get some reinforcements." And so Joshua just did this amazing thing. We pick it up in Joshua 10, verse 11. "As they fled before Israel, while they were at the descent of Beth Horon, the Lord threw large stones from heaven on them as far as Azekah, and they died. There were more who died from the hailstones than those whom the sons of Israel killed with a sword." Hailstones from God. Does that ring a bell? Is there another time, another place in the Bible that we read about hailstones being thrown? Book of Revelation, right? 7-year tribulation. "Then Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel," what an audacious prayer he prays here, "O sun, stand still at Gibeon. And O moon, in the valley of Ajalon." So the sun stood still and the moon stopped. Many skeptics of Christianity said, "Aha, here it is. I knew this book can't be trusted. Ha ha, the sun stopped. The sun doesn't rotate. The moon doesn't rotate. It stays in place. The earth rotates. The sun stopped." See, what the skeptics don't realize is it's a figure of speech. Just like we say today, "Boy, there was a beautiful sunrise today. Did the sun rise?" No, the sun didn't rise. The earth rotated around where it looked like the sun rose. "What a gorgeous sunset. Did the sun just all of a sudden go down?" No, the earth rotated. It's a figure of speech. Sorry, skeptic. "So the sun stood still and the moon stopped until the nation avenged themselves for their enemies. Is it not written in the book of Jashar? And the sun stopped in the middle of the sky and did not hasten to go down for about a whole day. There was no day like that before it or after it, when the Lord listened to the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel." Herodotus, an ancient historian, recounts that while he was in Egypt, a priest showed him the temple records there, and that he read of a day which was twice the length that had ever been recorded of any previous day. It's actually in the Egyptian history books. Of a day that just wouldn't come in. You've heard of, "Man, is this day ever going to end?" Well, this day didn't end for quite a while. The Inca people had a legend, a tradition that was just passed down for centuries and centuries of the day, the long day. So it was well known. Here's my point, that you can expect and trust that if God needs to tap the shoulder of creation to help him establish his plan for your life, he will. If you need supernatural deliverance, he has all of creation to help you at his beck and call. And then lastly, God comes to rescue us by coming to our aid by using angels oftentimes to come to us. God uses angels to rescue us. Here's a predicament that Elisha, the great prophet, found himself in. He was warring with the king of Aram, Israel was. Elijah the prophet king of Israel, was going against Aram. Aram hated Israel. And Aram would call his military advisors, and the king did, and would say, okay, guys, here's the thing. We're gonna sit five guys down here, and then we're going to send this troop around here, and then we're going to form a funnel. And all of a sudden, he would form this battle plan. Well, somehow, Elisha, this prophet of God, would either in the spirit go there and just hear this guy talking and get all the battle plans, or an angel revealed it to him. I don't know, but Elisha knew what was going on. And then Elisha would go to the king of Israel and say, hey, the king of Aram, here's what he's going to do, man. Don't go down this road, because you go down here, man, he's going to jump you. So go down this road. And all of a sudden, the king of Aram, you know, would find out, like, hey, man, they found out our plans. And he brought his guys and said, okay, who's the rat? Who's the rat? Somebody is spilling the beans here. And they said, no, there's nobody here. It's this guy by the name of Elisha, this prophet of Israel. He knows your thoughts. He hears your words. And he says, well, okay, this guy's got to go then. And so they went out, and they found out that he was in a city called Dothan. And he went to Dothan to kill Elisha. And he sent a bunch of people there. And we pick up the story in 2 Kings 6, verse 15. Now, when the attendant of the man of God, Elisha, had risen early and gone out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was circling the city. And his servant said to him, alas, my master, what shall we do? So he answered, Elisha said, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And the attendant must have said, I don't see any of our guys. All I see are a bunch of their guys. But Elisha saw in the spirit. Are you learning to see with spirit's eyes? What looks bad, but in your spirit, you just know that it's going to be okay. Somebody else says, oh, this is going to go this way. And you say, no, I got in my spirit, I sense we're going to be going this way. You've got to learn to see with spirit eyes. Then Elisha prayed and said, oh, Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha, warring angels. Horses, I guess angels ride horses. So if you're a horse guy, you probably have a good job in heaven taking care of horses. When they came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, strike this people with blindness, I pray. So he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. These unseen angels came to the aid of Elisha. The Bible says that they also come to our aid. Hebrews 1, verses 13 and 14. But to which of the angels has he ever said, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet? Are they not all ministering spirits? Who are angels in relation to us? They're ministering spirits sent out by God for our behalf, for the sake of those who will inherit salvation. And then in Hebrews 13, 2, it also says that we're not to neglect to show hospitality to strangers. This is a crazy verse. For by this, some have entertained angels without knowing it. And if you think you ever entertained an angel, we have any angels in here? I see a bunch of demons. No, I was going to say. Who knows? There's probably angels in here. Valley Bible Fellowship probably has angels assigned to it. My wife believes that she had an encounter with an angel. I'm a natural skeptic. She told me this story several years back, and I have for years tried to poke holes in this thing and say, you know what, well, it could have been this. Well, what about this? Well, you sure? Did it come down this way? Are you sure it wasn't this way? And no, and the more I poked, the more I became convinced that I don't know, have any other explanation other than this seems to be angel encounter. So I'm going to have Vicki come on out, and she's going to share that story with you.
Good morning. Yes, we tried to poke holes in this story, but I stand here before you today knowing that it was angels that came to our rescue. It happened on a Monday night women's ministry event many years ago. And we had seen everybody leave, and Tish Cruz and I were together about 9:15 p.m. and we're standing in our parking lot making sure all the ladies are gone and everybody's safe and sound. And after everybody got out, Tish and I got in our cars, and we pulled our cars in front of our big steel gate, got out of our cars to go and pull the steel gate closed and secure the building. And so when we got out of our cars to pull the steel gate closed behind our cars, she gave a pull and I gave a pull, and as soon as we pulled it, it made a funny noise and came flying down the track and completely came off the track and landed behind our cars. And so there, this big steel gate laid behind our cars off the track. And Tish looked at me and I looked at Tish and said, "What are we going to do? We can't just leave it like this and leave the building unsecured." So she said, "I don't know. I mean, there's no way we can lift it." So I said, "Well, let me call Doug." Like I said, it's about 9:15 at night, and so I gave Doug a call, and the phone rang and rang and rang, and he didn't answer. I said, "Well, let me call Jimmy Mack." Jimmy had been at the church about 30 minutes prior, so I thought maybe I could catch him before he gets home, and he can come back, and we can lift this steel gate up and put it back on the track. And Jimmy Mack, who has since gone to be with the Lord, his phone rang and rang and rang, and he didn't answer his phone either. And so there Tish and I stood, again, starting to get late, a lot of foot traffic on Sahara. And I look back at our back parking lot, and there's a large wall there with an apartment complex that sits on the other side of the wall. And I saw two men jump over the wall. And I told Tish, "Do you see those guys that just jumped over the wall and are heading our way?" She goes, "Yeah, I see them." I said, "Well, just stand behind me." She was a little tiny thing, and so I said, just my protective mode kicked in. "Here, stand behind me, and I'll protect you." And I watched the guys get closer and closer, and they're dressed in all black, black jeans, a black hoodie with their hoods on, getting closer and closer to us. And as we stood there, I'm thinking in my head, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? What's going to happen? I'm starting to panic a little bit. And they approach us, and one of them says, "Hello, ma'am, do you have a problem?" I said, "Yes, I do. This gate has fallen off the track, and I just went to push it just a little bit, and I started, I could tell, just getting really nervous and starting to talk a lot about how this thing fell off the track, and I could tell they weren't kind of really listening to me, but they were looking at that gate. And about that time, one of the guys, neither one of them talked to each other. They didn't say a word to each other. They didn't say, "You take one side and I'll take the other and I'll lift it at the front, you lift the back." They didn't say a word. And so one of the guys stands and he moves over and he stands next to Tish and I. And he just kind of stands there with his arms crossed. And the other guy walks up to the gate, bends down and grabs two of the slats in the center of the gate. And he bends down, lifts that gate up, and back, takes some steps backwards until he gets to the track, sets that gate down on the track, and I'm watching in unbelief. And the other guy is still just standing next to Tish and I, just watching him. They never said a word to each other. And after he put that gate back on the track, he looked at me and he said, "There you go, ma'am. God bless you. Have a good night." And they walked off down Sahara until we couldn't see him anymore. Yes, you can give God a clap praise. And there Tish and I stood looking at that gate back on the track, and she said, "What in the world just happened?" I said, "I think we just saw an angel." She says, "I think we just saw an angel too." And so as we watched them walk away, and this has been several years ago, I've never once seen those men again. And somebody said, "Well, what did they look like?" I could never get a good look at them because their hoodies never came off. But they looked like they were Samoan to me in the glance that I could get. They weren't big guys. They were a little stocky, but very short. And in fact, I have, I think, some pictures of the gate. That's the gate that protects our parking lot. That's the gate that fell, and I think I have another one that shows you. Look how thick that steel gate is. We have a construction guy in our church that said, "Vicki, that gate weighs between 300 and 400 pounds. It would take at least three men to lift that gate up." I said, well, God sent an angel to our rescue and took one guy to lift that gate up and say, God bless you, ma'am. Have a good night. So that's my angel story. I stand before you today, and I don't poke holes in it, that it really happened. God bless you guys.
To grab that gate right in the middle and to just kind of lift it up and set it, I don't see how that can be done. That is supernatural strength. You would think that they would lift the end up. You'd think the guy would say, hey, you going to come give me a hand? Didn't say a word. They just kind of, like they'd done it before. You may have heard this story, this joke. Guy was touring the Grand Canyon and looking over the majesty of the view there and a big canyon there and wanted to get closer to get a good picture. And man, a gust of wind came up and blew him over. And he's fallen to his death and grabs hold of him, desperation, grabs hold of a branch. And there he is. He's holding on to a branch between life and death, heaven and earth. And not a very religious guy to begin with. But, you know, when you're, what they say, there's no atheists in foxholes. And he begins to call out to God, God, is there a God? And a voice says, yes, there's a God. Are you up there and can you help me? Yes, I'm up there and I can help you. What would you like, my son? Help me, rescue me. Okay, son, I'll rescue you. What should I do, God? He says, let go, son. Let go and I'll rescue you. Let go, God? Yes, my son. Let go and I will rescue you. Atheist kind of looks up and looks down at the drop and thinks about it and then says, is there anyone else up there? See, God has a place for us. He's preparing you for eternity. He wants you to take as many people or be used to take as many people as possible with me. He wants you to share the gospel. He wants you to get to know him. He has a specific plan of who you're to be with, where you're to work, what you're to do, what your ministry is going to be like, your volunteer base. He has all those things in plan, and he will come to your rescue to accomplish that plan. So, sleep well tonight, church. You that have been going to bed with your mind racing about the worries, you who wake up and you're not even out of bed yet, and all of a sudden here comes anxiety, here comes the fear. Rest easy, okay? Give your life to God. Cast your cares upon him. Trust that he has a plan for your life. Do your very best to find out what that plan is and just say, you know what, God? Hey, you will get me where I need to get to, and you got all the creation to do that, okay? So sleep well tonight, okay? Let's pray this. Father, Lord, we are so prone to be given to fear, to be given to panic, to be given to anxiety. We try to deal with those emotions in hurtful and harmful ways. We try to numb ourselves. We try to busy ourselves. Lord, the better way is just to say, Lord, hey, you know what? I'm going to trust you. I'm going to do my part, and that is I'm going to follow you. I'm going to keep my ear to heaven. And trust that, God, my worries are your worries. You'll go ahead of me. You'll go behind me. You'll do whatever's necessary to accomplish your will for my life. You will establish, confirm, strengthen, and perfect me, God. So, Lord, give these folks peace, God, right now. Give them peace. For some of you, maybe it's just going to say, Lord, you know what? Hey, I've been bearing this load on my own. I want to surrender to you again today, God. I've taken on the worry. I've taken on life's struggles again. I'm dealing with it in my old ways, which are wrong. I just want to recommit myself to you today. For some of you, maybe you just need to give your life to the Lord for the very first time. You need to give your life to the Lord. It's very simple. Just right where you're sitting, say, Jesus, you know what? I want to follow you. I want to follow you. Forgive me of my sin. I want God in my life. I believe that Jesus died for me. You can do that right where you sit. You can do that at home in the comfort of your own home if you're sitting there. Maybe you need to rededicate your life. We've got folks up here that will be here for you afterwards. If you need prayer, if you need to come up and say, hey, I just give my life to the Lord, will you just say a quick prayer with me? They'll do that for you. Other than that, go ahead and look up. Always great to see hometown people. God bless you. Have a good rest of your day. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening. We pray that this message has ministered to your heart. If you don't already have a church you call home, we invite you to join us at Valley Bible Fellowship for worship, Bible study, fellowship, and more. We're at 2300 East Brundage Lane in Bakersfield, California, near Mount Vernon and Freeway 58. Reach us by phone at 661-325-2251 or visit our website at vbf.org. Here is our King.